This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV nationwide and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates. The White House under Donald Trump has decided not to reveal its visitor logs. Knowing who the nation's most important public servant is meeting with on a day-to-day basis is a crucial measure of our democracy. President Obama, who pledged to oversee the most transparent administration in history, also initially refused to release White House visitor logs, but then succumbed to public pressure. His administration did not release enough details, however, to make clear sense of the forces influencing the president. Now, the group Public Citizen has pored through news reports and White House press releases to compile a list of people that Trump has met with in the first few months of his tenure. It turns out, unsurprisingly, that corporate executives have hugely dominated the visits. Rather than draining the swamp, the new president appears to have flooded it. My guest is Robert Wiseman, a public interest advocate and activist, and the president of Public Citizen. Welcome to the program, Robert.
Hey, Sonali, good to be with you.
So first, let's talk about what tradition and precedent there has been in terms of transparency to the public with respect to who the president meets with. And I mentioned Obama, under George W. Bush, there was a huge concern about a lack of transparency as well. But before Bush, was there an expectation that White House visitor logs should be made public?
Yeah, well, the full release of the visitor logs, or at least the partially full release, really started with President Obama. I think it's where the center of gravity is now in the culture that these things would normally be made public. The Obama administration fought to exclude the logs from the open records laws, from the Freedom of Information Act, but then they voluntarily made the logs available. That voluntary release meant that they could scrub them for things they wanted to keep out. And there are plainly some meetings that ought not to be made public, but most should. They kept out some celebrity lists. They also kept out some visits from donors, which would, I think, be improper. But all in all, we got some important information from the Obama administration. From the Trump administration, we're being told, too bad, we're giving you nothing.
So we pay the president's salary. Taxpayers fund the upkeep of the White House itself. All of that is at the behest of us, of our tax dollars. He should be answering to whoever is the president should be answering to us, barring, of course, things related to national security and any sort of really justifiable levels of secrecy. So how has the Trump administration justified not releasing its White House logs, particularly given that Trump campaigned on overturning much of what Obama did?
Yeah, they haven't tried too hard. They said national security, which, okay, like you said, maybe some of these meetings should be quiet for national security. That is no reason why the logs themselves, all of them, ought to be kept secret on the grounds of national security. I went not infrequently to the White House and the Obama administration for a variety of meetings. There was no national security relationship to my meetings there, and that should be public, as it was. Then they said, well, it will actually save taxpayers $70,000 over a multi-year period to get rid of the software that's used to maintain the logs and put it online. It was quite something that they had the chutzpah to put that forward in light of many things, including the president's grand spending on his own travel. $70,000 over many years in the context of the federal budget is not noteworthy. And so, then after that, they sort of admitted the real reason, which is just cause. Okay, well, what's cause mean? I mean, why do they just not want to make this stuff public? The only real reason not to make public the list of visitors to the White House is to obscure who is going there seeking influence, seeking to cash in on their campaign donations and their lobby expenditures. Who's going there to try to negotiate special benefits for their industry? That's what they want to keep secret, and that's what they aim to keep secret over the course of the entirety of this administration.
So let's talk about what Public Citizen did. If you didn't get access directly from the White House, you went through and tried to put together the information from publicly available information, right? A review of news reports, but also press releases by the White House. How did you determine who the president has met with in the first few months of his tenure?
Right. Well, we only looked to see which corporate executives had gone by, because it just sort of struck us reading the news how many forums he'd had with CEOs of this industry or that, and started getting the impression, if we aggregate this, it's going to be quite something extraordinary. And it turned out to be so. So, you know, the president, he likes generals and their shiny medals, and he likes CEOs because he likes being around people who, you know, are big and powerful, who run businesses that were bigger than the one he ran. Of course, now he's president, so he gets to lord over them, and I think he likes that dynamic very much. What we found, I assume we were able to identify most of the CEO meetings at the White House with the president, is that if you total all it up, he's meeting with more than two CEOs a day on average. He has had meetings with the airline industry, with the healthcare insurance companies, CEOs, with the pharmaceutical industry CEOs, with the auto company CEOs. He's created a strategic and economic forum that's made up of a bunch of CEOs to advise him on economic policy. A lot of meetings going on with these corporate CEOs. We know that doesn't capture all of the influence these guys are having. The head of that strategic council, Steve Schwarzman, he's the head of the Blackstone giant hedge fund. He's now talking to Trump multiple times a week, according to news reports, and a crucial influencer and advisor to the president. Politico reported just overnight on Schwarzman's influence and pointing out, well, Trump's China policy seems to be evolving in ways that align exactly with Blackstone's interest in China. And I think we're going to see that through a bunch of industries. And in fact, the administration has said, look, to CEOs and to corporate America, come tell us what you want. What rules do you want to get rid of? What workplace safety rules do you want off the books? What environmental standards do you want repealed? What rules from Dodd-Frank or other financial protections do you want eliminated? We want to do your bidding. Okay, having appealed for industry to come give marching orders, the CEOs are happily visiting the White House and doing just that.
It's just kind of demoralizing hearing you talk about this. I mean, so 224 CEOs so far having met with the president. Well, you mentioned a particular CEO talking with him. Do you mean on the phone? So phone calls are, of course, something that we don't really have a way of getting a sense of who the president is meeting with electronically.
That's right.
Yeah. What about?
And then, of course, there's the CEOs and business people, you know, in the cabinet and in the White House. So,
right. I mean, our Secretary of State, our EPA, is dominated by corporate executives. He's literally just installed people who were up until very recently, corporate CEOs, right?
Yeah, that's right. They have, it's fair to say they have taken over the government.
Wow. They have taken over the government. Now, White House visitor logs make sense if we can sort of identify which White House we're talking about, right? Did Public Citizen include those people that Trump met with at what he calls Winter White House, Mar-a-Lago? What about Trump Tower in New York? I mean, this is a president who doesn't seem to want to give up his lavish lifestyle. The White House is not good enough for him, so he still insists on, at taxpayer expense, moving around the country. What about people he's met with on golf courses? Is there a sense of those meetings as well?
No. I mean, I think some of those have been made public, but you're absolutely right. And if you look at Mar-a-Lago, you know, there may be meetings that he's holding there that are scheduled where someone flies in to meet with him, like a traditional meeting. But Mar-a-Lago is a strange place. It's this resort and play place for the super rich. There are roughly 500 members at the club. And we know from news accounts, those people are interacting with President Trump when he's there, which, as you point out, has been almost every weekend. So that's a whole other kind of influence from the business class and the super rich. That's wholly apart from what we were kind of what we were tracking in our report. In those cases, these people may be seeking out the conversations. In some instances, it's been reported the president is seeking out those conversations. So it's just this very informal, jocular kind of environment with no sense of propriety, no sense of ethical standards, zero worry about conflict of interest, because of course all these people are advancing not just their worldview, but their own business interests. And they're speaking directly to the president about what he ought to be doing.
So Robert, how can people use this information as a tool? Trump promised to drain the swamp, quote unquote, as I mentioned. And I highly doubt that many of his, or even a majority of those people who voted for him, would be happy about the fact that he's meeting, hobnobbing, and being influenced by so many corporate CEOs. That seems to be the sort of dominant constituency he's paying lip service to. How do we use the information that Public Citizen has put together to expose what you've said is a corporate takeover of our government?
Yeah, I think you have it exactly right. If you think about why the Trump voters went for him, okay, look, there's some substantial number of people who were motivated by the anti-immigrant rhetoric, the explicit racism, all of the really horrible things that Donald Trump represents and was pretty explicit about in the campaign. But it's also the case that a big motivating factor for large numbers of his voters was this idea that he was going to root out the corruption in Washington. And people understood that in a very broad sense. He was going to get rid of the people, he was going to get rid of the insider dealing, and he was going to cure a rigged economy that is the product, in large part, of that rigged political system. Now, he has betrayed that, and it was fanciful to think he was going to do it, but he has betrayed that promise from the moment he was elected, and he is doing it literally every day as president. These kinds of CEO meetings, I think, help make clear that he's doing so. And over time, as these stories accumulate and as it breaks through into the media that Trump voters are consuming, I think they're going to get that sense of betrayal. They're going to understand that both because nothing is happening, the things that do happen are actually hurting their interests. It's connected to his and resulting from his hobnobbing with the super rich, with his seeking advice from exactly the corporations and CEOs he ran against, including especially from Goldman Sachs and Wall Street. And, you know, hopefully if we can get that message through, these people are going to look much more skeptically at President Trump and his allies in future elections.
And among the people that Public Citizen has found that Trump has met with, Jamie Dimon, CEO of JP Morgan Chase, the Dow Chemical head, Walmart's Doug McMillon, of course, the wealthy, uber rich and conservative donors, Sheldon Adelson and David Koch. And it's interesting, you know, the Koch brothers were reportedly turned off by Trump. And it seems as though, I'm wondering, Robert, if those corporate CEOs who might have been fiscally conservative but socially liberal and who spoke out against Trump are now putting aside any objection they might have had to Trump because they see him as the perfect opportunity to further their corporate and profit-making agenda, and they're only too happy to sacrifice the rest of us, to sell us out at the altar of what Trump is offering, just free reign over us.
Yeah, there's a narrative that emerged in some of the media in the last week or so, around the time that Trump started reversing himself on a number of policies. You know, it was sort of extraordinary, half a dozen things in a day or two, that the corporate class, you know, and also represented on the inside by Jared Kushner and Ivanka Trump and Gary Cohn, are moderating Donald Trump. And I think that's just a complete misreading of what's going on. They are influencing him, but the things they're driving forward are the deregulation agenda, the cut back on protections for the American public, and the cut taxes for the super rich agenda. That's what they care about, and that's what they're pushing on. You know, Jeff Sessions is still there, happily ensconced at the Justice Department, rounding up immigrants to this country and throwing them out. And there's no evidence that Donald Trump is backing off on that, and precious little evidence that corporate America cares or cares enough to do anything about it. So these guys do have influence, but it is not moderating the president. It's actually encouraging him to be more extreme, I think, on the things they care about, you know, to pursue the agenda of corporate globalization as it has been done in the past, but even to a more extreme extent, in contrast to part of what Steve Bannon promoted and some of the nationalist sentiments that Trump ran on.
Right, the sidelining of Steve Bannon may be less about Trump abandoning white supremacy and more about him just embracing corporate supremacy.
Yeah, that's well said. Well said.
And recently the news came out this week that Trump was reevaluating the way the U.S. Gives out H-1B visas. These are the technical visas that enable thousands of highly skilled immigrants to come legally to the United States to work in places like Silicon Valley, because there is a shortage of, you know, people in the IT sector. But it seems as though all, you know, Mark Zuckerberg might need to do if he's worried about not having enough Indians or Chinese people to hire with the skills he's looking for is go have a meeting at the White House and talk to the president, and he might manage to convince the president that it's in Facebook's bottom line, or, you know, whichever tech company's bottom line interest to leave those visas alone, right? I mean, that the president has also revealed he is very easily manipulated.
Yeah, that's entirely possible. I mean, I think the H-1 visa issue is, you know, it's high profile because it's a matter of significant concern to the tech companies, but it's pretty narrow and in the scale of things, really not very important compared to the overall immigration policy of the country. And of course, the horrible things that are happening right now, not prospectively. Under this administration.
Well, Robert, I'm assuming citizen.org is a good place to find the list of CEOs that Trump has met with that your organization has compiled.
Yeah, it's all up there. We're going to be putting out a bunch more stuff in the next couple of days in anticipation of the 100-day mark of this administration. And we're really going to try to drive home this theme that we're looking at a corporate presidency, a conflict of interest presidency, and the most corrupt administration in American history.
Just in the first 100 days. Well, Robert, I want to thank you so much, as always, for all the work that you do and for joining us today.
Thanks. Always great to be with you.
My guest is Robert Wiseman, public interest advocate and activist, and the president of the group Public Citizen. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.